CPS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
It's the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports with your boy, the Brian Campbell. Yes, the Boxeo edition back in your ear hole, ready to deliver that injection of the one and only unmistakable, untraceable performance, enhancing audio. TBC, your boy, that's the voice you hear. My partner in crime, you know the guy, right?
Who's this person you're interviewing?
I'm sorry?
Rafe. I'm Rafe.
Oh,
It's Rafe. I gave the guy a bye week this week. Not a lot going on in terms of Boxeo news. I slid in your DMs regardless, though, here with this here Box Pod. A little bit of a mixed bag of an interview special that I think you're going to enjoy. It's wild times these days, folks, all right? We know that, all right? I'm just here to try to crank you up a little bit.
I'm going to get off by cranking your knob just a little beyond the breaking point.
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily like that, but I think you understand which direction I was going in there. Wow, that was a little bit unsettling. But we're back with a bang. If you like this show, please spread the love, spread it forward. 5-star review, Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, I don't know, J-Date, wherever you're finding this. Look, if you can find nudes of Eric Raskin on J-Date, please send them this way, okay? Thank you. Send them this way. Speaking of the Raskin family, I'm halfway through, knee-deep in this Campbell family movie marathon, which is the Fast and the Furious, which is something I've told you about. I don't typically get down with those broskies, but I'm loving it right now. We just got through Fast Five, another Fred Raskin edited project, I believe, as he came on board along with Justin Lin for a nice little ride there during some prime FNF, not Friday Night Fights, and Fast Five, the debut of The Rock. Fast Five's like an all-star game of previous Fast movie members. It's friggin' fantastic. This is not just a racing tough guy movie. It's like an action slash almost like a war movie at certain points. It's fantastic. I could not ever have imagined that this franchise could get me that kind of fired up. But we're in the middle of it. Thank you to Fred Raskin for that. And thank you for Eric Raskin. I'm sure a lot of you know him and Bill Detloff, former Ring Theory boxing podcast guys, had that nice little spinoff with the Breaking Bill pod, doing episode by episode of Breaking Bad. I am very, very new to the game here, but I've started my quarantine outbreak attack on that classic series, Breaking Bad. I had to halt it for a few days, but I'm a couple episodes in. I'm about to dive into episode one of the Breaking Bill pod. So I'm gonna have a lot of Raskin in my life during this quarantine. Still trying to acquire the VHS tapes of the 1999 Maccabee Games doubles tennis tournament so I can get even more. But seriously, check out the great work that Raskin and Mulvaney are doing on the Showtime Boxing Podcast. They've been dipping lately into the archives and revisiting some major pay-per-view bouts of the last 15, 20 years and bringing in big-time guests, including your boy BC right here. I came on and broke down Mayweather De La Hoya with them, along with Leonard Ellerby and a couple other folks. So check out what they got going on. Check out Rafe's work, of course, on TheAthletic.com. He is the best boxing writer in the game today. Sorry, Eric Raskin, all right? I'm protecting my boy Rafe. It's Rafe, right? I mean, he inspires me. I mean, you know what I'm all about on this show, right?
Venus. That really inspired me.
Pinas, yes. So here's the deal on today's show. We got a big time interview with a guy we've been trying to track down for a while. Unbeaten unified 140-pound champion Josh Taylor, the Tartan Tornado. Our guy, your guy, get to know him. We go about 28 minutes deep with him on this show this week. We're going to find out how he's doing getting through quarantine season. Get into a little bit of this divorce he had with the McQuiggan family and his subsequent addition to the Ben Davison training stable, how that's working out, how they've had to pause actions. We got Josh Taylor hitting a heavy bag in his garden right now just to try to stay fit. Taylor's also going to break down to us his future plans. They go beyond Jose Ramirez, folks. Spoiler alert, big time plans ahead for that gentleman. And yes, we asked him about the infamous Billy Joe Saunders story of BJS getting them thrown off a plane in Vegas for a prank. Be here for that. Get deep into that one as well. To have that interview on the show, I must shout out a man, the 2018 and 19 two-time defending State of Combat Boxing Podcast content supplier, content demander, and fulfiller of the year. It is Evan Korn of Top Rank. So all you PR mavens out there, all the people in this business that I love, right? All the Fred Sternbergs, the Kelly Swansons, the Andrew Robertses, the Bernie Barmazels, all the PR guys that I love dealing with and women. I'll step your game up because Evan Korn's coming for you. All right? All right? All right? All right? I know what the ending is going to be like.
It was a good finish. I like a good finish.
We all do, Carl. Thank you. Evan Korn's coming. We've had the Bob Father. We've had Teo. Now we got some Josh Taylor this week. It's a fun little chat. I'm also going to bring on a fella you may know. I hope you know more of him. His name is Chris J. He's been a boxing manager. He currently manages Chia Santana. He's been a corner man. He works out at the Knuckleheads gym with Coach Host, Joseph Janik in California. He's a filmmaker, a front man of a band, and also he works for a great company, Contenders Clothing, which I'm sure you've seen their boxer briefs, their t-shirts. They've got merchandising lines with Muhammad Ali, the Rocky movie franchise, Karate Kid franchise. Our boy Chris J is going to stop by and just kind of update a good initiative that Contender is doing right now to try to put money in the pockets of fighters, not necessarily the big time names we have on this show all the time, but some of those guys that we celebrate each week and Do You Care with Rafe Boogs, those types that are headlining off TV shows or doing walkout bouts, you know, or providing themselves as B-sides for certain big time names. Contenders Clothing set up a fund. They got a good thing set up to try to put some money back into the fighters during this tough time. Because like Chris J points out, in this interview, even if we come back soon with empty arena bouts or studio fights or whatever, you know that you're not going to get the 4 and 6 rounders on there. So there's a lot of people that are struggling at this point. And obviously, it goes beyond boxing. But shout out to everybody getting by in quarantine season. And we've also got a must hear update from another hero in the SOC lineage. Yes, it's your favorite listener. No, not Ulrich Anderson. That's my favorite listener. Not MGC Speaks. Not Quality Bloke, last year's 2019 SOC Listener of the Year. I'm talking about another man.
Alex Godinez, what's going on, brother?
Yeah, what's going on, Godinez, with this deep dive on the drop? I'm going to bring on Godinez. I'm going to dial into SACTO to get the latest on the future of this incredible segment that's taken over the boxing world. It's got Twitter on fire. It's got people's underpants on fire, if you will. Is this the beginning? Is this the end? Is he going to Richard Schaefer me one day and break my heart and try to sign all my talent over to Al Haymon while I'm on a bed at a recovery center? It's possible. But for now, this lives on the SOC. Will it be back? What's going on in the future? We would not only want to hear that from Alex Godinez, we want to hear his takes on a couple other big-time boxing topics. So you got a trio of guests. It's wild and wacky, as always. We'll try to make sure that you have a good experience and can never guarantee that, of course.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
But we appreciate you all. But back on the other side, after a quick pause and a break and a word from our friends and sponsors, including, by the way, shout out to Ballsy.com. Love those folks. You know what I'm talking about. The nut rub, the sex spray, the ball wash, all that. They got some new lines. They got some new products coming out. So please continue to visit them. Ballsy.com. I've been rocking my Ballsy hat everywhere lately in quarantine supermarket lines. See, that's the thing. That's the thing. We're going to pause in a second. Hold on for a second. All right. My wife gets mad at me when I don't adhere to the complete letter of the law. And she's right in the self-quarantining in terms of like going out with my face covered. I don't have a mask, but she did purchase me a black do-rag. You may have saw my picture online as I dressed up like Jeff Lowe the other day for a little neighborhood social distancing happy hour that we had. But I've been trying to wear that thing, 24/7 as a do-rag, as a face shield. So I'm trying to do my part in that. I don't remember what the original point was, but whatever. Hey, why don't we just take a pause? Oh, I've been wearing that with the Ballsy hat, though. You get a lot of people giving you dirty looks, but shout out to Ballsy. We're going to pause now for a word. On the other side, we're going to break down whatever little boxing news there actually is and get to these big-time interviews to come. Dig it.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. About to set it all on fire. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
And we're back. It's your boy, BC. Wraithbook's on a bye week this week as we have an interview special going on right now. But is there any box news going on? Not really. Look, a lifeline. I've been covering, obviously, the skinhead side of this. The UFC's really fighting to get back in. Dana White, of course, got shut down last week. But it looks like May 9th is the next UFC pay-per-view. It's going to be a loaded one. They'll probably end up having to do it or wanting to do it and getting to do it from the UFC Apex Center in Las Vegas next door to their headquarters, provided Nevada State Commission, after that April 30th, ruling in terms of stopping non-essential business workers from congregating can be lifted to allow them to do fights. The reason why this matters for boxing is this is ultimately going to open the door. I mean, Bob Arum can say what he wants about Dana, and Dana is being, decently reckless, to say the least, during this period. I mean, you've heard me play the sound bites before.
I've had a great run, right? If the coronavirus is what's going to get me, let's do it. Bring it. I'm ready, Corona.
No. Don't die. Be unique, but don't die, Dana. Seriously. But what is the lifeline that was ultimately extended during that was from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis allowing pro sporting events, provided they do it right, do it in front of an empty audience, all that, can be deemed essential right now. It helps in some ways to boost the Florida economy. So you're seeing WWE get the green light to continue. You're seeing the potential for MMA to come there and also boxing. And Bob Arum, the Bob Father Top Ranks chairman, did come out and say, look, we may take them up on this. We're friends with WWE. We've been reaching out to them about their performance center in Orlando to potentially use that. Bob also talked about Todd DeBuff reaching out to UFC even and saying, hey, maybe we can use your Apex Center in Vegas, which isn't far from the Top Rank gym, the Top Rank office, should Nevada, which you would expect, have that ban somewhat lifted. Look, it's a little bit of a controversial topic because, the outbreak rate is plateauing or flattening, and we certainly don't want it to go backwards once people start congregating again. But I think a soft launch is what is best for everybody. We can't have public gatherings, mosh pits at concerts, and giant fights with crowds filled. But we should be able to do a soft launch with the help of state commissions, not going rogue, not going to some fight island, to be able to put combat sports back on, which I think will eventually quickly lead to all pro sports figuring out their own version of that. I think boxing is going to fit into that, and Bob will probably be ahead of the game on that. It's just about doing it right, getting state and government clearance, and playing it safe, and keeping fighters quarantined to the hotel and the arena and all that. It's a process, but I think they can work it out. Other bits of news, Deontay Wilder revealing finally in his appearance on the PBC boxing podcast that he just had surgery to repair a left bicep injury. Now, here's what's interesting. There was a rumor in the 24 hours before Wilder Fury 2. I remember it in Vegas. It wasn't from necessarily concrete sources enough to report it or share it, but there was a little bit of a rumor that Wilder was hurt, that he was pushing forth with the fight anyway. And, you know, you saw the performance, however you want to chalk it up, to 45-pound costume or Fury just going for it, and he just dominated them and broke down Wilder's confidence and exposed his lack of technique. However you want to shape it, that certainly was the worst of Deontay Wilder, and now he's starting to let it sort of eke out that in fact, a quote he said on that podcast was that Fury knows that wasn't the real me in there. And look, to a degree, I think he's right, certainly, even though he did get dominated and he lost that fight. There is pressure on fighters not to cancel when an injury pops up a week or two out, and there's so much money at stake and so much on the line. So that certainly could end up altering the narrative entering the third fight. Wilder teased on that pod that there's a lot more information that will eventually come out. You know, look, you can look at it and chalk it up to excuses, and it's probably true. It is an excuse, but yes, other people have fought through injuries and come through, but also you can't look past how this type of distraction does compromise a fighter. And if he had a serious left bicep injury, certainly that could affect a guy who doesn't have a lot of technique. We always say, look, if he can establish that jab, he can have a chance. Well, look, his jab was not a non-factor, and Fury went over the top of him. Fury walked through him. Fury still has to be the favorite in the third fight, but I'm glad that we're beginning to at least get some of these facts and truth out there of when these guys finally match up. The other related story to that is Ege, right? You know that fella, right? You know Ege.
I noticed in the boxing press here online, they're saying Joshua has agreed to an immediate rematch. Player, rethink that.
Well, no, he thought it correctly, Dwyer. Thank you, Richard Dwyer, and hope the Dwyer household is doing well during this. And he took that Ruiz rematch and he won. Now he's challenging Fury to, you know, be a real man, be a real champ, and fight him right now. Well, it doesn't work that way, bro. He's got the mandatory third fight, and Bob Arum kind of met that, you know, came right out when he heard that and said, no. Wilder not taking any step back money. So, and Wilder shouldn't, by the way. This quarantine should probably give him enough time to heal and enter into a third fight later this fall at his best possible version of himself. So, the winner, obviously, you want to see that set up against Ege, but let's kind of chill for that for now, even though, yes, truthfully, Fury Joshua, biggest fight you can make in heavyweights in the UK history, probably the biggest fight you can make in the sport right now without using a Maypac-type situation. You can argue there's better or as good fights, meaning a Spence, Crawford, etc., but that's a big fight. So hopefully the winner can take on Ege. Hopefully they can properly prepare themselves for what's to come.
Prepare your horse for the war. And
thank you. Thank you, Igus. Thank you very much. It's going to be a challenge indeed. All right. Hey, let's hear from Godinez. Let's bring in this guy, Sacramento Zone. You love him. Here he comes right at you. Let's ring him up right now. Senor Godinez.
Let me go get him.
Yeah. Welcome back to your home, the place you belong, the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports. Brother, how are you in this updated quarantine?
I'm doing well. I am still gainfully employed, thank goodness, right? We still have a job, still making money, making a living for my family. We're going a little stir crazy, but shout out to everybody who says they're going stir crazy when they never went out before.
That's a fair point. Indeed. Real quick question before we get into the matter at hand. What were you doing around 2013?
Athletes sleep with a lot of women. It's 2013. That's what we do.
Oh, I don't. I was doing the opposite of what Polly was doing in 2013.
Yeah, weren't we all? Godiz, yeah. I have an email in front of me, just so you know, okay? Because I'm about to praise
okay.
you, but I first want to throw some shade at you. Have you ever heard of a Danish brethren named Ulrik Andersen? We love that man. Have you ever heard of him?
Who is that guy? Exactly. I don't know that guy.
He emailed Rafe Boogs and I, Rafe not present at the moment, just in case you're wondering, to say that you're fantastic, but you're no longer in the running for Listener of the Year competition because you are now officially a correspondent. And what he's referencing, of course, is the segment that is sweeping the nation right now, that is waking people up from their COVID-induced quarantines. It's Deep Dive on the Drop. Did you just cross over from employee to management, from listener to correspondent, from regular bloke to audio hero? Because I've seen the DMs, I've seen the texts, I've seen the emails, the tweets coming in from our people in response to this new fresh segment, so to speak, if you know what I'm saying.
Sounded boring. Everybody talk about it the next day. Still sounded boring.
No. Only it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It was boring. I don't know. You know what, Brian? You've never given me a fair shake. But I'm going to leave it up to the judges here, yourself and Rafe. Makes about as much sense as two guys fighting it out for 12 rounds and then having three people who had nothing to do with the fight tell me who the winner is.
Wow. Wow. This is a strong take.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, man. At least some people got the score right.
But Alex Godinez, your debut of Deep Dive on the Drop has rightfully so lauded nothing but respect from the Johnny Sigs of the world. Maybe deep inside the B-sample blokes of the world. What people want to know, what this podcast wants to know, since you have birthed this child and brought it into the world on your own, will we hear this again? Will we see this again? Where are you going to take this thing solo? What is the future for Deep Dive on the Drop after probably the best debut we've seen since Lomachenko stopping Jose Ramirez to the body on the Bradley Marquez undercard?
Mm-hmm. Hashtag beauty. The future seems pretty bright for Deep Dive on the Drop. I'm going to have to go back and talk to the staff, see what we can put together, get together in the writer's room, get the producers on board, and see what we can do for the next dive on the Drop.
You're producing this on your own.
Oh, no, this is from all the fine folks at CBS Sports, Brian. I don't know if you heard Deep Dive on the Drop. I think everybody at CBS Sports
for their help in bringing this to light. But you are certainly the brainchild behind it. Are you humbled and overwhelmed by the outpouring of love from the universe here?
Oh yeah. I mean, in all seriousness, yeah, it's been awesome. I had fun making it. And by the way, it is just me who does it. I have some team of people putting together a segment on throwing water on someone's balls. But yeah, it's just me. I loved it. I had fun doing it and revisiting the fight. I didn't realize the cherry on top was, they had Chavez and Chavez Jr. On hand there and Lamps throwing the shout out to them during the match. So I thought that just added to that epic moment.
Yeah, I've forgotten how much Morales had been getting criticized for pissing that fight away against the king, Zahir Rahim. Do you have any recommendations, Godiz? Rafe and I dug deep the other week and, tracked down five fights each we thought the people should see. As people are navigating what I hope is the tail end of this non-live fight quarantine before Bob Arum finally gets the score right and buys his own damn fight island. You have any recommendations for people? Maybe Jason Litzau's entire career? Any fights we should be watching from... that may have been scored a draw in the Godinez household?
Ooh, I don't know. You know, I think a good collaboration to visit is, and I haven't seen a lot of people talking about this during the quarantine, is the Gotti Ward fights. And I believe, spoiler alert, today is April 15th. I believe today is Mr. Gotti's birthday.
Indeed. Indeed. Tax season. Yep. Arturo Gotti.
So, yeah. Well, pre coronavirus. Tax season. But yeah, I would say revisit the Gotti Ward fights.
Yeah, why not?
I think those are good fights to revisit. I haven't seen a lot of fervor on the TL for those lately.
I'm with you on that. Corrales Castillo getting a lot of love through Showtime's recent re-air.
Right.
I'm in the process right now for a CBS Sports collaboration I'm doing of ranking the top 10 or so boxing matches of this century, which is the first 20 years. We had a little debate that popped up. Should Cotto Margarito 1 get the love in hindsight for being the savage war it was, producing the indomitable Cotto knee, which we all reference when somebody falls on their own sword to take a break? Or has the fact that Miguel's iPad exposing Tony Marg's cheating made that a no-no in terms of reliving and loving the savagery?
You know, it's hard to sit there and like totally get into it, knowing Margarito's history with the with his glove of choice, unlike the Senador. It was a good fight, but it had such a big asterisk to it because he did take such a beating, and you don't know what was inside the gloves. Later, it was found out, you know, the gloves or the wraps were tampered with. Whatever came out. Something was tampered with, but if you can put that aside, I think that does go down as one of the classics.
All right. So we'll revisit Gotti Ward on your recommendation. That HBO Legendary Nights, the final one they did on Gotti Ward, friggin' fantastic, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Gotti. Yeah, and it's great to also visit, if you get a chance, visit the 24/7s as well, leading up to the fights, the HBO fights. And then watch the fight after you get through the 24/7, kind of a nice little appetizer to whet the appetite before you go on to the main course.
I'm with you on that one for sure. What is your take? People really want to know more about this Godinez cad on what the skinheads are trying to pull off. We could have live fights from those guys soon, and that might open the door for Boxeo.
Yeah, I mean, enter the meme of load size large with Dana White on it there. it's always the best when I show my wife those memes. She's like, just shakes her head and like, what the hell are you guys doing on Twitter?
It's an aphrodisiac. Tell her, yes.
It always goes down in the Dana White memes. there's a case for it, right? You keep the UFC going. You keep some revenue going for those fighters. But then we find out Dana White may pay a little bit more to extracurricular activities than he does to his fighters. And I think that's a hard one to tell. I mean, having Fight Island, all the staff and everything you're going to need to have a legit match in case, worst case scenario, somebody gets really hurt, God forbid someone gets killed, all the people you're going to expose to each other and, you know, just to put it together, even with minimal staff, that'd be a hard one to pull off. And hopefully doesn't wind up being one of the biggest blunders in kind of combat sports.
Yeah,
getting everybody in such close quarters there.
No panache, no flair, no show. Waste of money.
People have other questions from you, a noted boxing historian. A lot of headlines this week for the end of Dan Rayfield's ESPN career after 15-plus glorious years as the go-to media personality in written box. Do you have any favorite Dan Rayfield moments? You want to sum up his legacy in one fleece jacket? What do you have for us here?
Let me first say something. There is a new Dan Rafael, and his name is Rafe Bartholomew, and he's from The Athletic.
Indeed. Will that fleece follow Dan into Canastota? Hello, Canastota.
Hello, my boxing fans. You know, I hope they take the fleece and hang it in the rafters there at ESPN as a testament to the man. I don't know if he should get a new fleece wherever he goes, or the fleece, like you said, winds up in Canastota, but it needs to be enshrined somewhere. And all the best to Mr. Rayfield for wherever life takes him. He's obviously knowledgeable in what he does. Love him or hate him, the guy knows boxing, so I wish him nothing but the best.
I did work with him for many years there. Got to know the real man, Dan Rayfield, underneath some of that, so I do wish him well as well, even though he never gave Rigondeaux a fair shake. And hashtag never forget, after Floyd retired in 2015, Dan put Vladimir Klitschko number one pound for pound. I don't think we should ever, in fact, that should be a day that lived in infamy.
It should, but don't forget, Dan Rayfield's a real man.
That is, well, yeah, that is true. In closing here, Alex, it's great to catch up with you. The more screen time, air time, ear hole time you get on the State of Combat podcast, unpaid, of course, only paid with our love and respect. And if you should continue this fantastic deep dive on the drop, which, you know, me being a big fan of this soundboard, which is like a wife to me, you know, you're honoring my lady here. I couldn't be more excited at where this could go next. You're only going to develop more haters, whether it's the Ulrich Andersons of the world, the B-sample blokes, so to speak, MGC Speaks, all of our brothers in this weird fraternity. Do you have any message to them? Anything you want to say?
You know, I love haters. They keep me motivated. It's hard being at the top and staying at the top. You know, heavy is the head that wears the sound drop.
Good point. Like the great Mike Coppinger once said on Twitter, if you come at the king, you best not shoot your load, something like that. Something like
that. I don't know. But just wear turtlenecks now.
Yes. Yeah. Well, no, never, Mike. Never, please.
This guy is trying to shoot some bombs. I don't care. A lot of y'all ain't never been hit before. So let's get that straight.
You already know I've been hit. Did you have any thoughts on Floyd Mayweather's daughter, Mani Yaya, potentially stabbing someone's mother?
I mean, way to get to the point there on that one. Right? The point. I don't know. Mayweather got his own problems. I see he's training now, though.
Yes, that is good. Following in Uncle Roger's footsteps. I like that.
Yeah, following Uncle Roger's footsteps. I hope he's successful in training, too. I hope, you know, he can also train women how to defend themselves. That, I'm sorry, I regretted that the moment
that I said that,
and I apologize to the Mayweather family and the money team.
Yes, thank you. No. Okay.
This is Danny's night.
Yes, trying to find the right way to sum that up, and I can't find it. All right, well, Alex Godinez, thank you, sir. I don't know how long it takes you to put together your new art form, but I appreciate it. I await it. We love it. People can follow you at The Real Godinez on Twitter, I believe. Are you on the gram as well or no?
No, I am not on the gram, and it is the Alex Godinez, not The Real. Oh, I don't know God. Who the real
you
one
think
is.
I would be a fan of yours or follow you or something. Wow. Yeah.
Dude, what's your name again?
I don't know.
These nuts.
Sure. Alex, thank you so much, sir. Best wishes to you, the Godinez clan. I mean, could you believe somebody could look at your name and think it was Godinez for a few weeks? Could you even believe that?
No, I can't believe it. It ain't. It's not. It won't. And you're not.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks again to that fellow. Look, he's a funny dude, man. He fits right into the thread of what this show is all about. You already know he's the best. And all that. So shout out to Alex Godinez for maybe Ulrich Andersson is right when he shot that email to Rafe and I. Maybe this man has crossed over to more of a contributor than just a fan. But step up your game, super fans, okay? Because this guy's coming for you. It's coming for your bedroom. He's coming for everything, okay? Lock up your kids and your wives. It is. No. It is Alex's night, okay? Take that, Danny. Thank you. We're going to roll on here. and bring in the main event here. It is Josh Taylor, the Tartan Tornado, the unified 140 champ. Good dude, man. It was really cool to finally get him. It's cool, I've noticed, to, you know, Teofimo Lopez last week and then Josh Taylor this week, to talk to fighters while they're going through this, because they're rightfully bored, as we all are. And, you know, it was actually tough to get Teo off the phone last week. He's like, I can go hours with you, and I could have, for sure. It's kind of humanizing us all going through this, and it's certainly doing the same for fighters, where a lot of times when we talk to them, you know, it's a week out or week of a big fight, and they're cutting weight, and their mindset is just dialed in. It can be a different situation. To get them now as just regular dudes like us, what if Josh Taylor was one of us, just a slob like one of us? Well, you're going to hear it right now. Maybe he is, all right? I love that guy. He's on fire. It's going to be interesting to see. You know, we all kind of doubted him against Progre, and look what he did. You know what I'm saying? Look at him now, as they would say.
But look at him now. Look at him now. That's all that breed is here. That one right here. Look at us now.
We're also going to ask him about my boy, the Sandman, Lewis Ritson, who has been using Josh Taylor's name in his mouth, but not in nefarious ways, but just saying, let's make this happen. Me on the Geordie Shore, you of the Scottish North, let's make this happen. We'll hear Josh Taylor's thoughts on all that, and then some tall, pale, and handsome. It's your boy BC coming right back at you with JT. Hey. Brian Campbell, CBS Sports. How you doing, man?
Yeah, good, man. How's yourself?
Doing great. Thanks for giving me a few minutes to talk to you.
Yeah, no worries at all. I'm not doing much now anyway, you know. Limited to what I can do. I'm stuck in the house, bored out my head. I'm pretty sure everyone's the same all over the world.
Well, I got to tell you, man, while it is an unprecedented situation we're going through, and who knows what the future's going to bring, this last year for the damn Tartan Tornado has been monster on this half of the pond. We went from not really knowing who Josh Taylor was to, especially on this podcast, just falling in love with what you've added to the global boxing scene. Are you still sort of flying and glowing from what you achieved and accomplished winning that WBSS?
Yeah, of course, man. Thank you for that compliment. That means a lot to me. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Yeah, of course. I've only had 16 fights. I've only been professional 4 years, 5 years, you know, going on 5 years. So I've only had 16 fights. I'm unified world champion. The last four opponents have been world-class opponents with a combined record of 94-1, you know. So I've fought some of the best fighters on the planet in only 16 fights. And I believe I've still got a lot of improving to do, and still, you're still yet to see the best of Josh Taylor, I think. And I can't wait to get going. I'm just a little bit, you know, pissed that, you know, this year has kind of all of a sudden been put on a hold, because I was on a real good roll and the momentum was flowing, and it's been put on hold now. So it's a bit of a pain in the backside, but nothing that can be done about it, you know?
Yeah, timing was rough, because you make that big splash by announcing you signed with Top Rank. That puts you on ESPN in the States. A major network that has really been pushing, with Bob Arum's Top Rank, boxing to the forefront of American culture. So I can understand that frustration. How are you getting by on the idea of keeping yourself mentally and physically fresh? How hard is that?
Yeah, it's not too hard. You know, I like training. I like keeping fit, you know. So I've got a bag set up out in my garage in the back garden, and I've got a garage set up. I've got a punch bag set up. I've got a few weights and sandbags and stuff, you know. So I'm still going out and working out every day. I'm going running every other day as well, you know. So I'm still keeping myself fit and in shape, you know. And it's actually giving me, it's actually a little bit of a blessing in disguise, because it's actually giving me a little bit of a time frame where I can work on a few things where, you know, I wasn't so strong at in terms of my physical sort of abilities, you know, my strength and things like that, you know, getting a little bit bigger and stronger. So, yeah, it's given me a little bit of a window to work on things that I couldn't really do when I was in camp and stuff. So, yeah, it's good. I'm keeping positive. And my mindset just now is, we don't know how long or how short this is going to last. So my mindset at the minute is, you know, the phone could ring at any time and say, right, we've got 5, 6, 7 weeks to get in shape. and we've got a fight, we've got your fight rescheduled, this is the date, and this is when we're going. So I've got that in my mind. The phone can go any time, and that's what's keeping me in the gym and sort of ticking over and keeping strong and fit.
How long do you think you would need if Mr. Bob Arum calls you tomorrow and says, we're back on, that mandatory title defense that was going to be your introduction to the States in some ways for people that didn't catch you on DAZN in that fantastic World Boxing Super Series, how long would you need from accepting the date to getting in the ring?
I'd say I'm pretty fit at the minute now, you know, so I'd probably only 6 weeks, you know, because obviously I've not had any sparring since. I've had maybe one or two sparring sessions, like three sparring sessions I've had since my last fight, you know. And, you know, so all I would need to do was sharpen the tools. So I'd condense my sparring for 4 weeks, you know, and get in tip-top shape and get nice and fit, you know, nice and sharp again, sharpen the tools. That's all I would really need because I'm actually quite fit at the minute. I'm nice and in good shape, so I wouldn't need too long, to be honest. All I would need to do was get cram my sparring into sharpen the tools.
Fantastic. I mentioned the big splash you made. You've also had so much change in your professional life in this past year. Let's start with Bob Arum's Top Rank there. We call him Grandpa on this show. We're big fans. He loves to talk to us about his glory days and his preference for marijuana to get through the quarantine. But what drew you to sign with him and make this change at this critical point in your breaking off period?
Well, reason most of the, I wasn't really sort of happy where I was in the time and the people around me. I wasn't really happy in the situation. I don't want to get too much into it, but I wasn't really happy with things that was going on. So, and the other big drive was, you know, I know that, you know, Ramirez is the top rank, so I thought the fight would be much easier to make. You know, all the big fights, all the big names are with top rank in America, especially 147 as well, you know, so I just think it would be easier for the fights to make. And, you know, Bob Arum and, you know, ESPN top rank are the biggest platform in America, so it was a no-brainer for me, and I think it was the best moves I could have made, and it should be easy for me to make these fights happen now. So I'm just knocking on the door and making them a reality. I just need to take care of the mandatory defence and then go for the real target, Ramirez, you know, and take his belts off him as well.
Oh, that'd be a great fight, obviously, that so many boxing fans want. All four belts on the line. A part of this change was you switching trainers, bringing in Ben Davison, the young top bloke, who, of course, we remember from guiding Tyson Fury's comeback. With that is some of the stuff you referenced, the bitter end with the McQuiggan family. We've seen Shane basically say he regrets ever training you. Is this a distraction still in your life, or have you been able to sort of close that book?
I've closed that book. I closed that book a long while ago. You know, it's a bit of a shame, you know, because I got along well with Shane quite well, but you know, I wasn't happy with the things that was happening, so I wasn't going to stick around with people that I don't trust, you know. So I had to move on, and I did that, and I'm happy. You know, I'm happy. I found another trainer, a fresh start, a fresh beginning, and I'm flying. You know, I was really starting to get on a roll with Ben. We were starting to get to know each other the way we worked, and it was good. So this is a bit frustrating that this has happened at this time, because I could be using something like this downtime to be training with Ben and, you know, working on things and gelling together even more. But obviously with the lockdown, we can't do it. We've got to keep our distances and all that carry on. So I can't do it. So it's a little bit frustrating at the time. So I'm just keeping myself fit and strong at the minute, you know.
Absolutely. And Ben is a rising name in the training ranks. I love the defensive-minded presence that he brought to Fury, especially entering that first Wilder fight. What type of changes can we expect from your game plan with Ben in your corner?
I think just not too much different, to be honest. I think the style I've got and the way I fight is working, and I work against any fighter, you know, the style that I've got. But a little tweaky sort of sharpening the tools, a little bit defensively, a little bit more with the feet as well. I felt I was a wee bit planting my feet a little bit too much the last fight, in the last two fights. You know, I've got great footwork, I've got great head movement, which I kind of neglected a little bit in the last two fights as well. So just polishing up on skills that are kind of neglected. And I believe Ben is a very good coach for bringing the best of that out of me, you know, with the defences and head movement and the feet, keeping just a more polished fighter, a more complete fighter, you know. I'll be almost the finished article, you know. I don't believe you ever do become the finished article, because I always believe that there's always a fighter's always improving. I don't believe that you ever know it all. I always believe you can improve. So I'll be closer to being the best fighter I can be.
Well, look, let's be really honest, from American boxing point of view, when we see a top guy come out of the UK, we're always a little bit skeptical. We want him to fly over, land on American soil, and really prove himself, even if it's up to the level of a Hall of Famer like Ricky Hatton. We needed to see him on this level against the Mayweathers and Pacquiao's, and certainly he proved himself, despite not winning those fights, to be the real deal. When you entered this WBSS, the hardcores knew your name. But I don't think any of us expected that you would have been able to dig deep. And obviously, just referencing that Regis Prograis fight, the levels of toughness and ability to brawl and ability to bite down, you won over so many fans, as I referenced. I don't know if you just don't look the part of a killer, but has that been a thing that's followed you your whole career from the amateurs to pros, where people maybe by appearance overlooked you?
I don't know. I seem to have had that a lot in the later stages of my amateur career. I've done really well. I went to the European Championships with one hand and lost on a split decision to the Russian, who went on to win it in my third fight, you know. So, and then again with the World Championships, I went with one hand. I had the hand problem for about 18 months. I could only use my right hand. And, you know, I went to the World Championships. And I won my first fight, and then I fought the Kazakh in Kazakhstan, and again lost on a sort of split decision, and he went on to win it. So I was proving my class. I knew I was world class. I've never been out my depth with anybody that I've been in the ring with. You know, I've maybe been outpointed in the amateur system a couple of times when it was a computer scoring, but I've never ever been in the ring with anybody in my whole life that I've ever been outclassed. You know, or outgunned or outmanned. I've always held more of my own. It's always just been a really, you know, close fight or a real close split decision in my amateur career. And I was sparring with the top professionals when I was an amateur, and I've had good upcoming with sparring professionals, and I've always did well, you know. So I don't know why, but I just always seem to get it. Maybe it's just because I was a little lad from Scotland, you know, up against English lads most of the time, or I don't know. But I always have seemed to have been the sort of underdog in the dark horse, which I don't mind, because then there's no hype, there's no pressure, there's no nothing, you know. I come up under the radar, and I've shocked the whole world, as you said. So I know I can beat anyone in the world, and now you guys over the pond are starting to take notice now as well. So That's good.
Yeah, I mean, you got votes for Fighter of the Year in many publications voting, in a very crowded pool, I might add. There were some great runs last year of big-name fighters who had great years. And then your bout with Regis Prograis that I referenced, October in Greenwich, O2 Arena. The backdrop was certainly electric, but the fight you guys put in there was amazing. Not only Fight of the Year contender, not only two unbeatens coming together in a unification, but it was a brawl, but yet a technical brawl. It was really the best that boxing could produce. When you talk about two guys in their prime, so much at stake, so much heart, so much talent. Did you know that you were going to be able to swim in the deep end like you did against Prograis the way you did?
Yeah, with 100%. I've always known. I've had that in me. I've had it since I was a little kid. Been brought up fighting in the street against guys twice my size, twice my weight. You know, and fighting as a young kid is in the boxing game. I've always had it. You know, I've always had that viciousness in me, and the dark side, the badness in me. I've always had a bad streak and killer in me. Outside the ring, I couldn't be any nicer, any more gentle. But when that switch goes, the switch goes. And I've always had it my whole life. So I've never, ever questioned myself or ever even double thought about anything about if I've got the heart to dig deep or would I be able to do that. I know I have. And I've proved it to you guys there against Prograis. You know, the last almost three rounds, I couldn't see anything on my right hand side. I couldn't even see my own jab going out. So never mind punches coming another way. So I just bit down on that gum shield, and there was no way the guy was beating me. And you know, another fight. If my eye hadn't closed up, I reckon it wouldn't have got near me in the last two rounds, three rounds. But it did. Nothing you can say about it. I boxed almost three rounds with one eye, and I did all right. The boy come through.
You know, did you know when you're standing in the ring, one eye shut, going to the scorecards, really a turning point moment? You know, you lose that, we're still going to love you, but you win that, you're the unified champion. You go on to sign with Top Rank, you're a rising star. In that moment, did you realize the levels of really what happened there, the classic that you two authored?
We knew it was a good fight. All I know is I actually really enjoyed the fight. I had a great time in there, to be honest. I maybe never looked like it at the end, but I had a great time in there. I had a good fight. Regis had a good fight. He enjoyed it himself as well. So fair play to him as well. He gave me a good fight. But yeah, it wasn't until maybe a couple of weeks after it, after I come home, I went on holiday with a girlfriend, come back and I watched the fight, and watched it back a couple of times, and the buzz around my hometown back home as well, you know, and the news and the boxing world, it was just like, wow, I was a part of that, you know, I did well there. So yeah, I'm proud of what I've done and my achievements, and yeah, of course, they produced a great fight for the fans. Hopefully an all-time one of the fight fans favorites, you know, one of the favorites, hopefully. So yeah, it was a great fight, and I'm glad to have been a part of it.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the UK, because we've been jealous as American fans the last few years. Boxing is on an upswing in the States, but you know, it competes so heavily with the team sports and can get buried sometimes outside of the big fights. Yet we tune in, whether it's Eddie Hearn or any number of promoters in the UK that are doing great things. And the crowd atmospheres, the rush, the adrenaline, the pure passion of the fans over there is incredible. In fact, if you guys could sell that drug, you know, by the gram, it would be incredible. Because what the hell is going on over there, Josh? Anywhere there's fights in the UK, it feels like people are just acting like it's, you know, Ali versus Frazier every time.
Yeah, Great Britain and Scotland, the fans are amazing. They're very passionate. Britain, Ireland, and Scotland, you know, it's a small place, to be honest. And boxing was born here. You know, boxing was born here, and it's a passion that everybody likes. Everybody likes to see a good fight. Everybody likes to see entertainment. And boxing, obviously, there's not as much people in Great Britain or Britain in the UK and Ireland that there is in America. So there's a smaller bunch of audience that you can reach out to. So the sport is huge. The sport, when every time there's a good fight on, almost the whole country will see it and tune in and watch it. So everybody loves a good fight over here, and the fans are brilliant, especially in Scotland as well. The atmosphere the guys make at my fights in Scotland are just unbelievable. They're second to none. If you ever get a chance to come over to one of my fights, I would recommend doing it, because the atmosphere and the fans and the noise they make, and just it can be quite daunting for the away fighters coming over, because they make it so hostile and so passionate, and you know, it's amazing. You know, I wouldn't have them any other way.
Well, I've been arguing lately that we should bring the big fights in the States over there rather than the other way around, just to, you know, get a taste of that. So of all the top blokes over in your parts over there, including Ireland, all of the UK, who's the best fans? Is there a certain area? I'm sure everybody's got bragging rights, but I saw a couple fights in the Geordie area, and those guys are pretty nuts too. Who's the craziest fans out that way?
I don't know. Do you know what? I'm not sure, but obviously I'm going to have to be biased and say the Scottish fans are the best fans. they're just everywhere in Britain, to be honest. You know, if they're somewhere from some city, if there's someone from some city like Newcastle, you've got Lewis Ritson. Liverpool, you had Tony Bell. Everywhere, Manchester, Ricky Hatton. You know, so all these people, we've got these fighters that come through from one of their cities. They just back them 100% and get right behind them and support them 100%. So it's a great thing with Britain being so small. And it doesn't matter where you're from either. You know, it could be someone from Manchester, and he's a huge name in Scotland as well. And all the Scottish fans will travel down to the fights and get tickets and go watch them as well. You know, so they're just supporting each other, and it's a really good day and special atmosphere.
All right, you mentioned Lewis Ritson, and on our show, we've fallen in love with this guy. Win or lose, the Jordy Golovkin brings it. He gets in there and he bangs. I think he's over his head a little at 140, but he's been throwing your name out there, not with disrespect, but, you know, hoping to get you into a fight. I know that might not be of the career-defining nature that you're looking towards. Jose Ramirez, you know, moving up to welterweight and what's there, but could we see the Sandman against the Tartan Tornado? Would that be something that interests you?
Listen, it's a possibility. Anything in boxing is possible, you know. Obviously, you know, if I have to, I think he'll be in the WBA rankings, am I correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, it will be, yeah. So if I go ahead and fight Kung Song from my IBF mandatory, then go ahead and fight Ramirez. After that, I might have to do a mandatory for my WBA, which then might be Ritson. So, if the money's right and the place is right and the venue's right, and why not? You know, I think it would be a great fight, and what an atmosphere that fight would be. The Scots and the Geordies in opposing corners would be, the atmosphere would just be electric. You know, so yeah, why not? I don't shut it out completely, like it's not an option. But at this point in time, my eyes are on other targets, you know, which is to become undisputed champion and then hopefully move up in weight and make big fights up to 147. But if it comes and everything's right, then why not? Then why not? You know, I think it would be a great fight. I've met Lewis once or twice. He's a good lad. And, you know, I've not a bad word to say about him. He's a good lad, you know, and I'm pretty sure it would be a great fight because he leaves it all in the ring, and as do I. So I'm sure it'd be the makings of a good fight. And, you know, so why not? Why not?
All right, you're on a collision course for Jose Ramirez. Two unbeatens. That's all four titles at 140. But signing with Top Rank and considering the landscape in boxing's money division, welterweight, the sexy division, it would seem like all roads lead to Terrence Crawford, whether you beat Ramirez or he beats you, Regis Prograis still in the mix, etc. Do you see that as your ultimate sort of prize down at the end of the road, or do you have other plans?
Yeah, of course. If whoever's got the belts, whoever's the big name, that's who I want to fight. Who's deemed to be number one, that's who I want to fight. You know, I'm in this sport to challenge myself against the best, and I want to be the best. So that's my target. Whoever's number one or whoever's the best, that's who I want to fight, because I want to be the best. You know, so I do not fear anybody. I don't fear any man that's in that opposite side of the corner. So I don't fear anybody. I've no fear inside of me. So I just, if it comes, let's do it. You know, so I'm in this sport to be the best I can be. And if these fights come ahead, then absolutely fantastic. So, but I'm not going to run out and beg. And, you know, if it comes, it comes. You know, if it doesn't, it doesn't. Then I'll maybe have to start shouting about and mouthing off. But that's not my style. You know, I would rather just do it, go about my business in the ring. And then make the fights happen that way.
Well, the way things are structured politically in U.S. boxing, with all of the PBC welterweights on one side of the street and Terrence Crawford, unfortunately, sort of on his own island, it does get us excited knowing that you, Prograis, Jose Ramirez are all on that side. But I've been seeing more people than normal throw your name around which certainly is a product of your success. A month ago, yeah. Mikey Garcia doing a bunch of interviews saying you are a fight at 140 he would love. Just last week on my podcast, Teofimo Lopez told me when he's done with Lomachenko, maybe bring on Josh Taylor. I'm ready. How do you feel about hearing everybody's using your name in their mouth?
Well, obviously, I'm at the top now, so I've got the target on my back. But having these guys mention my name is brilliant, you know. And, you know, it keeps me motivated because I've got all these fighters that want to fight me. And I'm not scared to fight them. I want to fight these guys as well. Guys like Mikey Garcia, I think, is a great fighter. Awesome fighter. You know, hard puncher, great timing, good movement. You know, you've got Ramirez as well. You've got Prograis. and also Teofimo Lopez as well is another good fighter coming through. So, yeah, all these guys that are mentioning my name, and the fight with Terence Crawford is obviously the cream of the crop. And, you know, if you put me in that opposite corner, 100% I believe I can win that fight. You know, people might say, oh, he's not ready and blah, 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 like I get all the time if I've had most of my career. You know, I don't bother about any of that. I know 100% in my own mind that if I'm in that opposite corner, I can win that fight. I've got the makings to make that an upset. If I beat Terence Crawford, that's an upset in everybody else's eyes, but not in my eyes, it's not.
Wow. I want to close with this, Josh. It's been a pleasure to chat with you and sort of give everybody a chance who hasn't really heard about you and your story, get to know you a little bit more. I saw some headlines of a coronavirus prank involving Billy Joe Saunders and you got kicked off an airplane. What the heck's going on here? Can you give us the real deal, Holyfield, on what happened?
What happened, you know, it turned out to be a bit of a joke, you know, but one of the guys, the team manager, we call him, is Tom. He was coughing and spluttering for the past couple of days. And Billy Joe Saunders went home the day before, but he was saying like, oh, he doesn't feel well and stuff, and told Billy Joe this. And so Billy Joe phoned up the airport and said, you know, he might have coronavirus. And, you know, obviously a concern for him, you know. So the guy, he got chucked off the plane, as did myself and Ben as well, because we were traveling alongside them. So we had to wait for the next plane out of Vegas. So we had to wait 10 hours and then jump on the next flight. So it was a bit of a pain in the backside, but we got home eventually.
This guy, Billy Joe Saunders, he's crazy, Josh Taylor. He's always getting in trouble.
He's a good laugh. He's a good laugh, to be honest. He's a... You know, he maybe doesn't think things through a lot, but you know, he has a good laugh, and he is a good person as well. He does a lot of good work as well. So nobody's perfect, as they say, and but he has a good laugh.
All right. In closing, here once again, Josh Taylor, how soon are you expecting that this all ends? I know nobody really knows. Dana White and the UFC is trying to buy an island to put fights on. Other promoters are telling me maybe we do studio shows with no guests in the crowd and set up a ring inside of a TV studio. When do you see
That would be my worst nightmare, fighting in a studio with no guests and no nothing, you know, and just TV cameras. That would be my worst nightmare, you know. That's just like a sparring match on TV, which is no good. That would be hard to get up for that one, I think.
I'm with you on that. We're going to have to wait and see. Stay fit. Stay mentally ready. I know you will be. He's a top bloke. He's your IBF WBA champion at 140. Josh Taylor, any message for the fans out there, these new American fans that you're picking off left and right, about what's coming for you to close 2020?
Yeah, just obviously, the fans that already know me, thanks for your support, and thanks for your continued support. Fans that maybe don't know me, tune in and watch some of my fights, and keep an eye on me for my next fight, because hopefully you get on the journey, and I can be on the radar for some big fights, and provide you all with some big and exciting fights for the future. So thanks in advance, and I hope to see you all soon on stateside.
Thanks so much, Josh. Take care.
No problem. Add yourself. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
What a good dude. Special thanks again to Josh Taylor, a top bloke, a quality individual as well. Thank you. Thank you, Frank Warren. Do we still have you? Do we still have you on this board? See, you got to understand, this soundboard is out of control, okay? It's out of control. You're lucky anytime I can cue up a sound within 5 seconds of somebody referencing something. It's nearly impossible, but Josh Taylor is that dude. If we can find it, okay?
Let's talk math. Let's talk boxing.
No, Dwyer. Let's talk about good people that we like on this show, right? Because that's how men roll. That's how men do it. Thank you. Can't find the sound drop. All right. Hey, great moments in podcasting history right there.
You're a quality operator, a quality bloke, and a quality fighter.
Thank you. Thank you, indeed. All right. What can you expect in the near future on the State of Combat podcast? Look, the MMA news cycle is always changing, so please, I encourage you to check out the Skinhead Show, the State of Combat MMA podcast each week. Sugar Rashad Evans, the UFC Hall of Famer, jumping on. Not only are we sort of chopping up, breaking down the constant news cycle of Dana White, can he pull off this craziness? Can he not? And by the way, there is, like I mentioned earlier, a boxing connection to a lot of this, because I think once somebody breaks that seal, whether it's the state of Florida commission allowing pro sports or Dana White pushing forward to make it happen, everyone will follow, including boxing, including other states. So it's all connected. And also, we've been doing a little thing called Storytime with Rashad. We did a two-hour pod 2 weeks ago where Rashad Evans went back in the archives with me, relived every second of his season two victory in the Ultimate Fighter reality show. A lot of crazy stories came out that he pissed his pants in the middle of the octagon and no one noticed during that victory fight over Brad Imes to win that tough championship at heavyweight. Also a good story on this week's SOC MMA pod, in which Rashad Evans breaks down one time as UFC champion when three drunkards harassed him in a hotel hallway, knocked on his door, forced their way in, and he he did the business. He shared a few three-piece in sodas, as Jorge Masvidal would say. Good little piece of business there. Check that out. Always looking for fun guests in the future, and we got some coming up in the next couple of weeks. Jim Ross, the great WWE Hall of Famer, current voice of AEW, is going to come on and tell some great stories. And if you lived in the 90s like I did, and I know you did, you remember my guy, Joe Bob Briggs, from TNT's Monster Vision, from TMC's Joe Bob's Drive-In Theater. God, I loved that guy in the 90s. I've secured him. We're gonna have a nice little chat with that fella. He's got a fun project coming up. So try to dip a little bit deeper into those 90s archives, get some special guests on while we wait this quarantine out. But I hope you're all safe here. We want to help out the fighters too. So let's throw to a fun interview with my guy, Chris J, a guy connected deep into the boxing game. Enjoy it right now. It's coming at you. All right, I want to bring in one of the good brothers in this sport of box. If you don't know him, you should, because he's kind of a Forrest Gump in this industry. It's my man, Chris J. You work with Contenders Clothing. You're a regular at the Knuckleheads Boxing Gym, and I think you've held every position from manager, PR, journalist in this game. But how's everything going, man?
Oh, yeah, it's going great. Thanks for asking, Brian. Everything is very positive, considering what we're going through. And yeah, that's me. You sum me up. I've done everything in boxing but make money, and I'm okay with that. You know, I love it. It's a labor of love, you know.
I want to get later to you're also a rock star. I hope the people know that. I hope the people have their Army of Freshmen CD collection handy.
You know, it's funny. I do wear two different hats like that, and I kind of keep it chill. I don't think a lot of people in boxing know my music and movie stuff. I kind of keep them separate, and my music movie people don't know anything about my boxing stuff. So, you know, I try not to cross wires, so to speak, Ghostbusters.
Well, we haven't crossed paths since that Showtime boxing card in New York when Jermall Charlo took on your fighter, Francisco Chia Santana, and he was game. He was game, man.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, it was Jarrett Hurd.
Jarrett Hurd. I'm confusing the names. And he made that a pretty damn close fight.
You know, he really did, and we couldn't be more proud of him. I thought he fought as good as he could. It's just such an overwhelming size difference. I mean, yeah, we discussed it prior to. We knew why we were there, why Chia was there. I mean, he's a welterweight. Jarrett Hurd is a super middleweight, you know? And, you know, I don't think they wanted anybody that was going to risk Jarrett Hurd essentially getting knocked out, but they wanted somebody game. And I mean, nobody gave him a prayer, Brian. Nobody thought he was going to end that fight standing on his feet. So we looked at it like a Rocky moment. We were like, yo, we're 147 and went in there against a guy that was probably 175 that night. And we gave him hell, and we thought we did a lot better than the judges gave us. I mean, we don't think we won the fight, but we thought it was a heck of a lot closer. And when they announced the scores, you were there. You know, Barclays was booing their heads off. I mean, I don't think people thought Chia won, but it's also very heartbreaking and disrespectful when a judge gives you one round.
True.
When you fight that hard, you know, and he made that fight fun, dude. Hurd was kind of just running and moving. I mean, Chia was pressing the action. He connected a lot, and Hurd even said afterwards, like, man, that was a lot tougher than I thought. But nobody writes about that. They just write about, oh, Jarrett Hurd didn't knock him out. And that's what's tough about being the B guy. You know,
that's
when
true.
You have an A-level night, but people still visualize you as a B guy. And I just tweaked out on that. But there you go.
And Jared Hurd tried to F around and employ a new style that wasn't working and was getting booed out of the building for it. You were there representing Chia as a manager, which is another hat that you hold in this game. And, of course, Chia was trained by a guy we love on this show, Coach Haas, Joseph Janik. How are you doing in that manager side of things? Are you building a stable here? Is this the next Al Heyman?
No, yeah, well, I'm hanging him for music too, right? So yeah, I'm following in the right footsteps. You know, occasionally I bump into somebody that needs a little help, or, you know, I'm close friends with, and I do what I can. So, you know, it's not definitely, that's not like a passion, if you will. I mean, it's a nightmare more than anything else. But, you know, if the shoe fits every once in a while, if I like somebody, I'll help them out a bit.
Well, I told you afterwards I was involved with the fighter meetings that day before Jarrett Hurd and Francisco Santana. I was working on the countdown show on the undercard stream, but you came in with your fighter, and I think you won over every member of the Showtime broadcast crew as like an old school WWE manager or something, like, you know, shouting up your fighter's backstory and the fact that he's going to be in this fight, he's going to have a chance.
Yeah.
I'm like, somebody needs to put a microphone in front of this guy. No wonder you're a front man in the band, you know?
Yeah. You know, I do some announcing and coverage on some smaller streams and stuff like that. But, you know, it's funny, you know, actually, that those fighter meetings are always so great, and that was a really good one. Everybody was vibing and laughing, and you have so many personalities on the Showtime team. But I gotta tell you something, O'Brien, I'm gonna be straight up with you. You know, I was very disappointed in that commentary after the fact, because I thought we had them on our side. Listen, I know they got to call it as they see it. That's the game, of course, right? But man, oh man, I don't really think those guys were understanding what Chia was trying to do in there. I'll make it very blunt. You know, Paulie, I love Paulie, but Paulie says Chuck Cook, and he says cutting off the ring 35 times in a 30-second conversation. You know, you could ask him what he wants for lunch, and it's like, I want a Chuck Hook, and I'm going to cut off the ring, you know? So, you know, he kept saying that, but when you are a little guy, I'm going to talk about basic boxing for your listeners that actually do fight or train. You know, if you got a guy and all he wants to do is hit you with a right uppercut, you need to stay to the right all freaking night. If there is a bigger man in front of you, don't stand in the line of fire, you know? So he was kind of getting chastised on the commentary for not going, like, wow, come, he isn't cutting off the ring. Well, if you're in there with a guy that may have 25 pounds on you, you got to work off the outside. So even though that may involve a little chasing, he was having more success out there, because look at what happened in that fight. 10 seconds left. He stepped in the middle of the ring, went toe-to-toe, took that big cut that Paulie wanted, and he got dropped. So it's like sometimes you hear this commentary, and you're like, the guy also has to survive. As much as you want to see a bloodbath in there, we got to find a way to try and win a fight, right? With also not playing into what the guy was looking. Hurd sized guys up all night. He waits for them to take that step. So anyway, as much as we had a great time with all those fighter meetings, and I thought my boy Al and Paulie were going to show mad love, they just went with this, you know, you get that agenda that those commentators roll with, brother. You know how it is, and it's hard to get them to steer the ship in another direction. I mean, I was as pro as they are, and Bernstein's one of the all-time best, there's always a sort of a storyline, a narrative, and it's so hard to break guys of that mid-fight, you know? Sometimes it takes history to change how these guys address it. But so again, that's true. Just me. That's me nitpicking.
No, you fought for your fighter, and I don't think you were wrong on that, as Paulie would say.
Thank you, man. At least some people got the score right.
I think you had the score right on some of those things. But, you know, not everybody hears Jimmy on the same thing. People pick up different things, different narratives, like you said, coming in, and they stick with them. But
when you fight a name like that, when you fight an A guy, it's the A guy's story. It always is. It always will be. That's a sport, right? So unless you pull off a major upset, the storyline has to revolve around the A guy. He's the star. Whether he does good or bad, that's going to be the headline the next day. It won't be Chia Santana does better than expected. It'll be Hurd does less than expected. And that's very tough. There's fighters out there. I love guys like Chia. He's one of the nicest guys on planet Earth. And there's a lot of guys at his level that are those high level B guys that can kind of dip their toe in the A water. But sometimes I think these guys, you know, in many cases, like the Mauricio Herreras of the world, they'll occasionally win fights or at least eke out a draw. And then you get the card and it's all Adelaide birded up and they didn't even get a round. And you're like, you cannot tell me that judge didn't have a preconceived notion of what they were going to see. It's one of the biggest problems with boxing, right? I mean, how many lives would be altered if scorecards were right? I mean, it's very difficult to be a B guy at any level.
As Paulie also once said, boxing is full of shit. I used to love this game. But there's no boxing at the moment, of course, as we are navigating this quarantine. But I want to bring you on and shout out what's going on with the Contenders Clothing Company, who you do some great work with. If anyone doesn't feel like they know them, they make those badass boxers, the Muhammad Ali, the Rocky franchise, the Karate Kid, Cobra Kai franchise, and so much more. This fund you guys are putting together to help the fighters really popped me when I read about it. Please tell our listeners about it.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, it's really cool. Basically, you know, Contenders is a company that predominantly boxer briefs, all has a great line of T-shirts, too. You had mentioned they have the Rocky line, the Muhammad Ali line. I help them out a lot. And what's really happened in the past year is they've been embraced by the boxing community. There's just no doubt about it. You know, fighters all over the world at weigh-ins have been wearing Contenders. It started very organic. And then they kind of brought me along with my connections in the boxing industry to say, hey, you know, these people, this is a wonderful world and you know about it. Can you help us get more product to more of these guys? And let's build this, for lack of a better word. That's what we've been doing over the past year. That's how you and I got to meet at a Contenders party in L.A. And what happened was things are really going in the right direction. Like, you know, we were really like developing this boxing situation and these are our people and it's my world and it's great. And we help anybody out. Our thing is like, as much as kind of we're known for Tyson Fury wearing us, Brian, we're just as happy to give an 0-5 fighter on a 4-round undercard in the middle of nowhere some product too, because it's one and the same, you know, it's just great. And when this happened, man, and I know you've spoken about it on the podcast, a missing element of this, as much as you and I talk about it, how much we want the big fights back and are the big guys going to fight each other when they come back and are there going to be fights with no audiences and what's going to happen? There is a world of club fighter out there, right? And maybe that's not the right name, but there is a world of 4-round, 6-round guys, Brian, that maybe they're not the A sides, they're the B sides, but they supplement their income or in some cases make their entire income through fighting.
Right.
Off TV shows, on the undercard, on televised, walkout bouts. And again, I'm not talking about the young hot prospects that Top Rank already grabbed and they're building them. I'm talking about the guys that fight those guys. And these are some guys that have often worn us and really embraced the company. Before some of the world champions found out about Contenders, it was these smaller guys that was wearing us, right? So we're like, we want to do something to help these guys because we know them personally. We know situations of guys that are flat out unemployed that fights got, I mean, that first weekend, if you remember correctly, when everything hit hard, like mid-March, right? Do you remember that was a massive fight weekend? It was just St. Patrick's Day weekend. I mean, there were club shows all over the United States. And I knew all these guys that were lined up to wear us. One by one, the calls came in, the Instagrams came in that all these fights are canceled. I know people that were counting on that money to pay the bills, to feed their kids. So long story short, we put our heads together and we came up with this idea of coming up with a fund for fighters. No strings attached, man. No red tape. No show us your W-9 or W-2. Just flat out sign up for it at the website. We're going to take 10% of all sales in the month of April, from April 1 to May 1. Anything that comes in, no matter what, we're going to take 10% of it, put it in this fund. And in addition, I think the really cool thing that could really make the fund bigger is we did an exclusive fundraiser t-shirt. It's going the social distance, right? So it's got the going the distance Rocky thing, going the social distance. It's for sale on our site. And literally every penny that comes in from that, Brian, is going into this fund. Every single penny.
That's
no
awesome.
Strings attached. There's no small print at the bottom. So we're going to take all the money from this one shirt. We're going to take 10% of all sales. We put it in a big pot. And come May 1st, every fighter that signed up, we don't care who you are, how big you are, what your record is. If you're an active pro that was affected by this, we're just going to split the pot, man. Nice and easy. We're just going to send money out to every single person. So if there's 10 people in that pot, they're all getting an equal thing. If there's 50 people on that list, if there's 5,000 people, because again, we don't know the reach that this is ultimately going to have, everybody will get something. It is not a savior check. You know, it's not the stimulus check, but listen, if we can, I'm very serious when I say this, if we can pay somebody's electric bill next month through this, or we can make sure that the family gets groceries for a week through this, you know, I don't want to throw a number out because we don't know what that's going to be. It could be low or high, but we want to do that. I mean, nobody's doing this. Nobody's looking out for these guys. This is not for the Charlo brothers. You know what I mean? This is for some guy who's fighting off TV and, you know, he's making $1,000 in a four rounder and he needs it desperately. And that's the vision of this. It's the Fighting for Fighters Fund. You can find it at contendersclothing.com. And if you buy the social distance t-shirt, boom, every single penny will go towards these fighters. And we want to give it directly to them without having to wait for the state unemployment agency to set up the W-9 contractor worker checks that are going to take 2 months to get out. That's a general thing, man. It's not, you know, Brian, again, it's not a game changer. I wish we were bigger. God, I wish we were a massive company, you know, that could really do this and have a major impact. You know, like, hey, sign up, we're paying your rent. And we would do that. You got to understand, I mean, 10% of a major company is a lot of money, right? I mean, we could literally say, hey, if you're a fighter affected by this, we got your rent next month. That's not what this is. But we may be able to get your groceries or pay some bills and help and just throw some of that goodwill out there. These fighters were there supporting us. And all of a sudden they get in trouble and we're just like, we need to sell more underwear. Like, that's not what it's about. And I wouldn't want to be involved with a company that thought that way. So it's great that they're doing this. And that's basically the gist of how it works, if that all makes sense.
I love it. I hope all of our listeners go to contendersclothing.com. And I'm telling you, if you feel like you haven't heard of them, you've seen fighters wearing these. You've seen the t-shirts. I got the Rocky Beats Drago shirt or the Rocky Beats Clubber Lang one as well. There are some fantastic stuff on contendersclothing.com, especially that Karate Kid line, man. That pops me big time. I mean, look, you can come for the Rocky draws. You can wear basically Rocky's, the ones he wore in each movie to fight. You can get the underwear boxer equivalent. But I'm in it for the Karate Kid hats, so I hope everybody checks it out.
Are you a Karate Kid man over Rocky?
Huge.
Like when all the chips are down?
Well, Karate Kid all the way. I love Rocky, believe me, but I'm a Karate Kid man all the way. So when I saw that hat, the trucker hat, which basically has the Miyagi symbol on it, I was fired up.
Wow, so at the end of the day, you take Karate Kid 1 over Rocky 1?
Yes.
A better movie, I'm just saying personal taste.
Personal taste, I would say I was in love with both franchises at the same time. They both are in a lot of ways, you know, spreading the same message of overcoming and underdog stuff.
And if the director, John Appleton, who directed exactly. Rocky 1, also directed Karate Kid 1, which is an interesting little
tidbit. Now, would I take Rocky 4 over Karate Kid 1? Probably not, because Rocky 4 turned into like an 80s Schwarzenegger-like action movie. I mean, it's its own separate genre. It's amazing. But shout out to what you guys got going on. Great hats. Love the connection with the Karate Kid and Rocky. I mean, can we expand with Contenders Clothing? Is there any other future franchises that they're sniffing at?
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, the big one for us that was really cool was the Ali thing, because that is such a prestigious thing. You know, Ali's face has been on everything on earth except for boxer briefs. So we got the Rocky line, we got the Karate Kid line, we started the Ali line, which will probably hopefully expand. We got our eyes on one or two more things, and a lot of our original stuff is starting to do really well at what we call our Fight Club. You know, some of the athletic t-shirts that we have. We're really looking to, ultimately, the dream would be, Brian, is to kind of expand into athletic gear, actual training gear, you know, like shorts, just, you know, high level, really classy stuff for athletes to train in, along with everything else that we offer. So we definitely got some new stuff coming this year, but this pandemic has affected everybody. You know, everything kind of has been backlogged and kind of put on hold a bit. We've really expanded our endorsement program. You know, we've signed a couple fighters, and that's been going great, and we're getting ready to sign a bunch more. But this happened, and obviously, what's the point of signing a fighter right now, if you will? You know what I mean? If they don't have a fight coming up. But we're going to announce a lot of new guys for that. And I mean, like, we back boxing. Like, it's legit. And that goes for MMA, too. Obviously, I'm a boxing guy, but I love MMA. We really want to be part of the sport because, dude, if you look at apparel and boxing, I mean, help me out. What companies really exist that cater to that market?
I don't think there are many. So that's a good call.
Yeah. Totally. We love the sport, but we want to put our money where our mouth is too, and that's what this Fighting for Fighters Fund is all about. Like, these are people, man. The people that are spreading the word and telling people about Contenders are some of these fighters, from club fighters to all the way up to Tyson Fury. I mean, they. I think what people like about the brand, honestly, is that there's guys like me involved who care, who love boxing, man. You know what I mean? I'm not concerned about moving underwear. I'm concerned about fighters getting hooked up, and fighters are some of the nicest people on earth, and they get nothing, dude. I mean, like, there's so minimal endorsement deals for professional fighters. I mean, what you get, the big daddies, like what Ryan Garcia lands a Gymshark deal, or Canelo gets an Under Armour deal, but you could probably count on one hand fighters that have actual apparel deals. And it's not like it used to be, man. You know, it's a very different world, and I don't think people look out for fighters across the board.
Oh, certainly not.
And we'd like to change that a little bit.
And I love the type of fighters you were talking about earlier. Like, you know, every week on this podcast, we count down the fights that are going to be going on, you know, when they're in session for the weekend, even the off TV stuff. And we're like, man, Hammer and Hank Lundy, it's like his seventh fight this year. What the heck is going on here? Some of these guys, you know, that's all they know. That's what they do. So we can appreciate that. Hopefully this helps.
And that's a great example. Hammer and Hank Lundy, he wore contenders in his last fight. That's the type of guy we're talking about.
Yes.
You know, that's a guy that makes his living fighting. And there's a lot of guys like that. Some of the smaller guys supplement their income. A guy like Hammer and Hank, he's not getting those big checks anymore, man. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But he's still fighting in Delaware, and he's still feeding the family, and he's a great guy. And those are the people that need our help, man, because there's something to take a bigger picture in all this. And I know you've discussed it. When boxing comes back, God willing, is really soon, right? There's a very good chance it's going to be to empty venues. I mean, where do you think it's going personally? I mean, you got insight and knowledge. Where do you think it's going to happen?
I think we're going to start off with empty venues, studio lot fights, whatever. Yeah, it's going to be a while. That's the thing. I'm very optimistic, and some of that is Dana White of the UFC is pushing so hard that I do feel like people are eventually going to bend to help him do it the right way. So that'll bring back fights, which is great for entertainment, for fighters getting paid, but I think it'll be a long time before we have full arenas. And I've talked to Teofimo Lopez recently, Josh Taylor, and these guys are like, I don't want to fight in front of an empty arena. I fight for the fans, and I can appreciate that.
No, it's true. But think about what we were just talking about and everything you just said with maybe going to studios and, you know, Fox Sports and all that kind of stuff, right? So check it out, Brian. What happens to the off-TV guys?
Yeah.
What happens to the opponents? They're not going to get any TV time. You know, if PBC runs a show, or Showtime runs a show, or Top Rank runs a show, you're going to get the names, right? You're going to get the Teofimo Lopez's. You're going to get the guys that can draw and do ratings. What about 2 4-round guys? They fight on club shows that are off TV that only exist on ticket sales. So if people can't go into the venue, right, the promoter is not going to have the event, and those guys are not going to get work. They're just not, and they're such a vital part to the system. You'll never get the big names if they don't have those type of guys to work their way up the ladder a little bit. Like, just because boxing back does not mean it will be back for everybody. It'll be back for the big names, just like anything else in life, right? The top guys will be okay. And the guys at the bottom, I mean, they could get pushed out of this in a sense. I mean, I'm not trying to be like an alarmist, but I don't think anybody's looking out for those dudes. And that is a complete possibility if we don't have actual fans in venues, that there's a whole segment of fighters that won't be fighting. Maybe they even retire. Maybe they age out, whatever it may be. But it's going to really change the landscape dramatically of what boxing looks like. So, I mean, it's going to be wild. I'm just as excited for people to get back and see the fights. I'll watch them anywhere, right? But it's going to be very different until people get back in actual arenas. You know, there ain't no walkout bout for a 3-card TV show. You know, that's not going to exist. There's nobody in the audience to watch it.
Well,
so
get yourself a t-shirt, hat, boxers at contenderclothing.com for sure. And Chris J, I feel like I could talk to you for hours, man. I did want to close. When you told me you were part of a band, that you were the front man of Army of Freshmen, and I did some research. I mean, like, you were a thing. You were pretty, I know you were a hit around the world, but how far did you guys get in the States to the crossover mainstream level?
Yeah, you know what? We were right there, man. We had our toe in the water. We did very good internationally. We still do. I was famous in Japan for a month,
yes.
You know, in 2004. We did very good in England. But we were definitely victims of the time. Like, right when things were really turning the corner for us was right around the time the financial crisis hit. What was it, like 08 or whatever. So, like, we were just building and doing everything right and, you know, getting ready to sign the major label deal, had the deal memo, and then boom. But we had the fortune of accomplishing so much, man. We worked hard. You know, we toured all over the world without any major backing, you know, bands to this day all over the world. And, you know, it was a bit of the pop punk genre. That's sort of where we fit in. But all my dreams came true in music, except, you know, ultimately making a living out of it, you know? So, you know, I tell people, like, I like to find sinking ships. I'm drawn to them, you know, like, music business is going down. Okay, cool. Well, let me get in the indie film, hop on the indie film. Oh, I'm alive. That ship's going down. Holy shit, there's boxing. Here I come, you know, and then all of a sudden the pandemic hits, you know, so. But I've been doing all those things all my life. I make a joke when I say it. But, yeah, no, we still have a lot of success and still doing some music, working on a new record on the side in the pandemic. So, you know, I try and That's keep great. Everything going, you know.
And I'm sure, you know, does it still pop you when someone walks by and it's like, hey, aren't you that guy?
Yeah. Of course it does. Yeah, totally. I love it. It's the best. You know, it's the best. You know, it's nothing. They're my two loves in life, music and boxing, you know. And I think the parallels are incredible, man. If you look at a struggling musician versus struggling band, even down to promoters and how shows work and how opening bands sell tickets and how you can get picked up by the big boys. And I mean, there are some insane similarities and a lot of sad stories in the mix too. You know, I'm drawn to those type of characters because I guess I am one, you know.
The underdog making good. I love it. We're all drawn to that. Yep. Chris J, it's been a pleasure talking to you, brother. Hope to see you out at the fights very soon.
Look forward to it, Brian. Take care and health and safety to your family. Look forward to talking to you soon, my friend.
Thanks, brother. All right, special thanks to my man Chris J. Check out his band Army of Freshmen, and he's doing great work over there at Knuckleheads Gym. He's managing Francisco Santana, as he mentioned, doing a lot of good stuff with Contenders Clothing. I did want to say I'm not just trying to help out fighters here by spreading this message, but I'm a big Contenders Clothing fan. I'm rocking the, as I mentioned, the Rocky Beats Apollo shirt quite often. The Muhammad Ali boxers, the fact that you can get the Rocky trunks for each movie as boxer shorts, it's pretty damn badass. Can you beat that? I don't know. The fact that you can get a Miyagi Daniel-san headband as a trucker head, I'm in on that stuff. Okay, that's my stuff. All right, that's my ish. You can get the skeleton boxers that that Billy Zabka wore as Johnny in Karate Kid at the Halloween dance. You know where I'm going with that. So it's fantastic. Help out a fighter. Be part of that. ContendersClothing.com. You've been eating long enough now. Stop being greedy, okay? Help out these fighters, okay? They risk it all. Some gave all so that we could have some in terms of entertainment. So shout out to all these fighters. Shout out to the Irish crew, the Godinez crew. Shout out to Denmark and my man Ulrich Anderson. In that email that he sent this past week to Rafe and I, referencing that story I teased where he was trying to catch Fury Wilder 2 on pay-per-view in the middle of the night, but simultaneously had a lady over and was trying to seal that deal and trying to balance both. And he reports to us that it did exist, if you know what I mean. I think you know what I mean. It did, in fact, exist.
We'll make him shoot his load.
So he shot his load. Let him shoot his load.
Yeah, I think she let him, you know, maybe.
Maybe he blew his water.
I think I should finish. Thank you. Shout out to Ulrich indeed. Shout out to many different crews out there. Your crew, the SOC crew. We got any other locations?
Shout out to Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, shout out to Omaha. Bud Crawford doesn't think this virus is real. I don't know what to tell him, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's it. That's the SOC pod. Support at Rafe Boogs on Twitter. His great work with The Athletic. I'm sure he'll reveal some kind of new awesome project in the future. I'm your boy, BC. Thank you so much. Special thanks to Josh Taylor, Chris J, and the one and only Alex Godinez. Hopefully we're going to get some fights soon. I feel it coming, folks. I need it. I know you do, too. We're all going through this quarantine together. Obviously, there's levels to this. You know, I haven't lost my job. We're thriving in a way through this. Very busy. Some people haven't worked in over a month, and I can certainly, you know, understand how hard that must be. And so other people have lost loved ones. Other people are sick. It's a wild time. So stay mentally healthy. That's the foundation. Rashad Evans gives some great tips this week on our SOC MMA pod about how important it is. Keep your immune system big and strong. Take some walks. Get outside if you can, depending on your, you know, life situation. Not all of us have hiking trails right down the road, but get out and breathe a little bit. Remember, if you are working from home and it's hard, because it is hard, believe me, even without this, just get through. It's about survival right now, okay? We try to thrive, but sometimes it's about survive. And realize that you don't have to be a superstar. Get through. Do your job. Get through. life's going to get normal again. We're going to touch that normalcy again. It's going to happen. I feel it. Special thanks to my super producer, Mikey Mormile, and everyone else at CBS Sports still pumping this content along so you can touch it. Check out, obviously, the growing brand that is Morning Combat, Showtime's digital show. I do it every Monday noon Eastern with Luke Thomas on YouTube. The latest in MMA and boxing. It's a little ridiculous, like you like here. And also, we've been spinning off with Classic Combat. We've been doing live companion shows. Go back in the archives on YouTube. Check out what we did for the Marquez Vasquez trilogy, Corrales Castillo 1 and 2. We got some Strikeforce MMA in the future. Fun stuff going on there. Lots more cool stuff to come from the SOC, and I got two words for you, okay?
Boom, dig it again!
That's three. That's three, Ray. Don't get too excited. I got two words for you. One more shout out.
Marcos Viejas has done a spectacular job.
Who's that?
The journalist.
The journalist. Thank you. Thank you, Richie. I'm not trying to rip you off.
Quite frankly, this brother's feeling a little bit ripped off.
Nope. We love you, Rich. Hopefully everything's going well post-move for the Dwyers. And we out.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.